20-17 Buffalo. They send another blitz. Selling out. Flag on the play. Might be a free one. They've got Kelce at the 30. Kelce 25. Angling back. 20. Now he's going to lateral it back at the 15-yard line. It's Tony. 10. 5. Touchdown. Kansas City. They mess around in practice with this all the time. It's going to go with a 49-yard touchdown. Kelce, the old University of Cincinnati quarterback.
Offside, number 19, offense, lined up in the neutral zone. 5-yard penalty. Check it out.
No, it's not going to go for a 49-yard touchdown, Mitch, unfortunately, because Kadarius Toney was lined up offsides on the play, and the Chiefs continue to shoot themselves in the foot. And now, everything after the game to deal with on top of it all. So we will talk about that, and we may have a different perspective than some Chiefs fans have out there. Some of you may be all about complaining about what took place, or you may be not liking the look the Chiefs gave after the game. We'll go over all that coming up in just a moment. Also, KU wins the Border Showdown. K-State overcoming a lot of distraction this week with a nice road win. We'll recap the NFL from yesterday. There's a baseball player that's going to make $70 million per year, which is more than eight Major League Baseball teams' entire payroll per year. The Royals made a move, which means the Royals will win the World Series. I'll explain that. And the Heisman Trophy winner is a guy that was on a three-loss team that lost by 21 to Florida State. But remember, Florida State's not good enough to be in the playoff. Ah, lots of good stuff. Love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just sitting here, I'm like, that guy, I mean, that tells you that the Heisman Trophy list wasn't that great if a guy from a three-loss team, but of course it's from an SEC team.
Yes.
So, of course it is. So anyway, let's go local sports recap from the weekend, basketball and wrestling.
Yeah, hoops, the Stockton girls and Lakeside boys winning the Highway 24-36 preseason tournament championship Saturday. Stockton girls won by 20 to finish 3-0 and they moved to 4-0 on the season. And the Lakeside boys won 71-22 over Stockton to finish out their 3-0 tournament. They moved to 4-0 overall as well with that victory. Girls-wise, Thunder Ridge over Rock Hills, 41-27. And Rock Hills beat the Thunder Ridge boys 44-42 in the final day there of the tournament Saturday. Smith Center girls won the Amos Morris Classic in Russell as they beat Phillipsburg in the girls' contest. And the St. John's Tipton boys had a tough one, hard-fought, low-scoring three-point loss to Ellsworth there to finish second place in the Morris Classic. St. John's Tipton girls were fourth. Smith Center boys beat Sylvan Lucas for seventh place. And the Sylvan Lucas girls won seventh place as well over Central Plains on Saturday. So also the Osborne boys and girls both third at the Purple Trigo and Gold tournament. Trigo Purple and Gold tournament, excuse me. I got my names mixed up there. But Osborne finishing third. The girls beating Oakley in overtime. And the boys beat Ness City there on Saturday. You can find full scores and brackets at ncksports.com. High school wrestling from Friday. Brogan Monty, a bullet at 113 pounds, and Brody Boudreaux at 215. They both won championships at the Ellis Railer Round Robin and went 7-0 on the season with those wins. So great start to both Brogan Monty and Brody Boudreaux's seasons on the wrestling mats there. Jeff Giles Invitational was Saturday in Minneapolis as Concordia won the team championship for Osborne. They had Caden Schultz in second, 157 pounds, Gage Seifert at 190, and Grant Middleton at 215, both finished in fourth. And at the Manhattan Dual Tournament on Saturday, Smith Center goes 1-3-1. They beat Shawnee Heights, tied with Paola, lost to bigger schools, Manhattan, Lincoln Southwest, and Dodge City. So you can find all the results from wrestling as well from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all posted at ncksports.com. So that's a look at what's going on or what happened over the weekend. So stay tuned. I have more high school sports coming up for you this week. And the basketball broadcast schedule always posted at ncksports.com. Coming up tomorrow night, we have Victoria at Osborne on Katy Country 94. And also we have Republic County at Beloit on Z96.3 and the Beloit Trojan Channel. So again, all the latest sports information posted for you at ncksports.com.
All right, so we are jumping to the Chiefs, and the sports ticket brought to you, as always, by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. I really don't want to spend much time talking about the game itself because I think it's a waste of time. Anybody that's a true Chiefs fan saw the game. They know what happened. All right. Quick cliff notes is that the Chiefs were down 14-0. They had to battle back. Scored before halftime. Down 14-7 at half. Defense did its job again. Again, the Chiefs' defense did its job. I mean, they were on the field for most of the first half. Chiefs' offense finally did something. You're down one score. They give up field goal start second half. Chiefs' defense gave up 6 points to a very potent offense in the second half. Chiefs' defense did its job again. Missing Drew Tranquil, missing Brian Cook. Nick Bolton, I thought, was a little bit rusty in regards to communicating with different guys because there's different guys out there, Mike Edwards among others. Chamari Connor, a rookie, was at safety. And the Chiefs defense had some bumps and bruises early in the game, but they bounced back. I was worried the Chiefs were going to get boat raced. Mm-hmm. I really was. And I honestly thought it might not be a bad thing if the Chiefs got boat raced. I was actually thinking this as I was watching. I was like, you know what? Maybe that's what the Chiefs need, just to absolutely blown out, completely blown out to smithereens. So they can't blame other people for their losses, which we'll get to here in a little bit. So the Chiefs defense did their job. The offense, this is a continued theme week in and week out for the Chiefs, is that the game is close and the defense keeps it close. The offense does enough to keep it close too, but then the defense gets a three and out or multiple three and outs, and that's when the Chiefs offense has a chance to really help their defense and go down the field and score the lead touchdown, take the lead, or put the game away. And what happens almost every time? It doesn't happen. Yesterday, the Chiefs got three and outs from the Bills in the second half. The Chiefs went three and out right after two of those three.
Yep.
And so no Isaiah Pacheco yesterday either, which I thought would make it easier to defend the Chiefs offense. And maybe in some cases it did. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was fine, but he's not the same running back. We know that. Travis Kelce had an okay game. They're going to bracket him, double him. Rashee Rice continues to excel. He had a drop. Yes, he did. Richie James had a drop, although that was a tough catch. We know Kadarius Toney had a drop, which was just Kadarius Toney. Kadarius Toney reminds me of some of the kids I've coached that are 9 and 10 years old. Whether it be baseball, basketball, or football, Kadarius Toney reminds me of those young kids that are 9, 10, 11 years old that I've coached in youth, back when I had my oldest kid when he was younger, and now my current child. And you know what the comparison is and why I make that comparison? It's because Kadarius Toney needs to slow the bleep down. Everything Kadarius Toney does is rushed. He's like the 9 or 10 or 11-year-old hyperactive kid that just needs to slow down. We just had a basketball game in Superior yesterday, and we played pretty well. And I told the kids afterwards, I said, how many layups did we miss? Because you guys rushed everything. It's like you're just, it's like a hot potato. Slow down. Like I told the kids to inbound the ball. You have 5 seconds to inbound it. You have 5 seconds if you get stopped on a dribble. You have 5 seconds to make a pass if somebody's in your halo area. I mean, and then I went 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 1,004. Don't you think that's a lot of time? Well, yeah, it is. Somebody needs to teach Kadarius Toney that.
Yeah.
Because everything Kadarius Toney does is all sped up. And then he does like 18 different joystick moves when he catches the ball. A lot of times he's not going forward anyway. And he had a drop yesterday. That was an important one earlier in the game. It wasn't the decider. And then, of course, we know what happened towards the end. There was a minute 15 left, and Kadarius Toney lined up offsides. You heard the call by Mitch. It was exciting, amazing play. I'm more upset about the penalty because that would have been a... like one of the top highlights in Chiefs history.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was an amazing play, and the Bills probably felt like they were snake bitten again at Arrowhead. I mean, it was a great play by Kelce. I mean, it was a beautiful throw by Mahomes. The offensive line, a rookie left tackle who I thought played pretty well yesterday after a couple of bumps early. I mean, there were some positives to take out of the game yesterday. There really was. I mean, and I will say this. I think the Chiefs defense is way better now than they've been the last few years. But do we know that the Bills wouldn't have gone down and scored in the final minute 15 to beat us? Like, everybody acts like if the Chiefs touchdown would have stood and the refs would have just closed their eyes and acted like Kadarius Toney wasn't clearly offsides, that the Chiefs would have won the game. It would have been 24-20 with a minute 15 left, and I believe the Bills had a timeout or two left.
Yeah.
They could have easily gone down and scored a touchdown to win the game. And we saw that a few years ago where they went down and scored in like 50 seconds. Now, I know this year's defense is better. The defense is playing well in the second half. And the way the Bills have been playing this year, I don't think they would have gone down and scored a touchdown to win the game. But I am very concerned about some things here with the Chiefs. And some of it isn't... really, it isn't really even on the field right now. Because it's the same thing. There's nothing that happened yesterday is any different than any other game the Chiefs have lost this year. Let's not act like we're reinventing the wheel. It's the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. It's dumb penalties, untimely penalties. And by the way, these penalties that we're talking about are accurate. All the ones I saw yesterday were accurate. Kelsey got away with one, and they waved it off. I don't know why, because they felt sorry for Kelsey, because that was a penalty on Kelsey. Turnovers. Mahomes threw a pick on a bad pass on a swing out. Good play by the defensive end. We talked about there were drops. Tony, James, Rice all had a drop. Kelsey's had drops. It's been that way all year long. The offensive line, I think, doesn't get enough credit. They give Mahomes a lot of time most of the time, and the receivers don't get separation. And Tony Romo, I thought, was very accurate when he pointed this out yesterday. He said, more teams are playing man against the Chiefs. Did they play man against Tyreek Hill? No, they didn't.
No.
Now, I'm not sitting here telling you bring back Tyreek Hill because, well, sure, if you give him to me for free, I'll take him. But I don't want to get in that conversation. The Chiefs obviously won a Super Bowl without him, and they're fine without him, okay? Would you take him back? Sure. Would you have won it last year? I doubt it, because your defense wouldn't have been better. But the point I'm trying to make is you don't play man-to-man when you have really good wide receivers. You'll play more zone, or you'll play lockdown on one side. You'll play some zone coverage. There's nobody the Chiefs have that anybody's worried about beating them man-to-man except Kelsey. And what you double Kelsey. I've said this from day one this season. You double Kelsey and make these other receivers beat you. MBS is not going to beat you. Sky Moore, I don't even know if he played yesterday, for crying out loud. He is absolutely a ghost. Although, that would be better than being Kadarius Toney, right?
Yeah.
Kadarius Toney's dropped multiple passes in the first game of the year. You could argue that cost them the game. And then yesterday, and the Chiefs would be 11-3. Somebody put it on social media. Without Kadarius Toney, we're 11-3. If we just didn't have him on the team, we'd be 11-3. Because I can't think of a ton of contributions he made this year to help us win a game. I really can't. Now, he did help us win a Super Bowl, though. Punt return, had a touchdown catch. I mean, he did do a couple good things last year. And all these Chiefs fans have been clamoring for Tony to get the ball more often because we have bad receivers. Now you see what happens when he's on the field more often. Tony makes some plays, and then he'll make a horrible play. He'll make a good play, a great play, and you're like, wow, look at all the talent. That is what Kadarius Tony is. Okay? He's a risk-reward type of player. Sky Moore is a obsolete player right now. And MBS continues to not be on the same page with Mahomes. There was one time yesterday with Mahomes that was about ready, I think, to chuck his helmet at MBS. It was brutal. The only two guys that are on the same page with Mahomes is Kelsey, and then Rice is getting there. Rice, that touchdown catch was nice, although there was a route earlier. He should have scored a touchdown, but he should have flattened it out, like Romo pointed out, like I saw live. I'm like, dude, that ain't a Mahomes. Rice, he has to flatten that route, and he has a touchdown. And Rice is going to learn. So there's potential with Rice. We know what Kelsey is. There's no Pacheco. So now it makes it a little harder on the offense. And yet, despite all that, the Chiefs scored a touchdown yesterday to go up 24-20 with a minute 15 to go, only be negated because a wide receiver isn't smart enough to line up behind the ball on the line of scrimmage. The Chiefs lose for the fourth time in six games. Mahomes threw for 271 yards, a touchdown, interception. The Chiefs had their opportunities to win. They didn't do it, mainly on offense, like it's been most of the year. And we can make excuses all we want. Chiefs fans, you can make all excuses you want. You can say Pacheco didn't play, he was hurt. Bills have injuries too. Stop it. Okay? We didn't have Brian Cook. Jamari Connor did fine back there. Mike Edwards did fine. We didn't have Drew Tranquil. Well, with Bolton back healthy, Tranquil didn't play as much anyway. We didn't have Donovan Smith. Well, guess what? We had less holding penalties on the left side of the line. I would argue we might have been better yesterday with Wanya Morris at left tackle and Donovan Smith. So don't give me all these excuses. But after the game, I feel like it's all about excuses. And I am concerned about the accountability of this team. MBS earlier this week didn't take accountability for the way he's been playing, really. I mean, he did to an extent, but it's just not full out, what you want to hear. Kelsey has. Mahomes has. Andy Reid always says it's my responsibility. But Sky Moore hasn't. He said some things here recently. You're just like, dude, what are you talking about? You stopped running on a route. You didn't run hard. Do you not understand what football is? I mean, you're a professional wide receiver. There's been more I don't know how to term this. There's been less accountability, I think, with this team than in previous years. I think Mahomes is accountable. I think Kelce is. I think Reed, those are your leaders. But Chris Jones, to me, you know, he made that stupid penalty in a game, right? Against the Dolphins, almost cost him. You didn't see Chris Jones after the game say, I cannot do that. That's just horrible. I can't. At least I didn't see him say it. He kind of joked about it a little bit. There's got to be accountability. And I understand Patrick Mahomes is frustrated. Absolutely do. I don't blame him blowing his lid and chucking a helmet on the sideline. By the way, Tom Brady did this too. So let's not sit here and act like all these other quarterbacks are saints. The reason this is a story is because Mahomes never loses his cool. That's the biggest reason why this is a story. The other reason it's a story is because the Chiefs lost again. And they are the face of the National Football League. They've been the 5 straight AFC title games. We know 3 Super Bowl appearances, 2 Super Bowl wins. Mahomes never played on the road in the playoffs. Now, more than likely, he will if they get to the playoffs, because they don't have a 1-game lead in the division over the Broncos. And there's got to be a lot of self-reflection right now for this Kansas City Chiefs football team, because the reason they lost the game yesterday, ladies and gentlemen, if you think it's because the officials messed the game up for the Chiefs yesterday, you are looking through big-time Red Kingdom, Chiefs Kingdom, red glasses. You are so blinded by the light that you can't think objectively. The Chiefs did not lose that game because of the officials. All right? They haven't lost a game this year because of the officials. And by the way, the Chiefs bitching and moaning and bellyaching after the game about the officiating, were they saying that after the Super Bowl last year when there was a hold that you could have easily let go? I'm not saying it wasn't a penalty. I thought it was. But you know what? If that happened, as I said, the day after the Super Bowl, I remember you and I talked about this. Chiefs fans are like, well, that was a hold and the defensive back admitted it. Really? What would you have said if it happened and it was L'Jarius Sneed with a slight tug on A.J. Brown and the Eagles milked the clock and kicked the game-winning field goal? What would Chiefs fans have said? You got to let them play. You can't call that. I mean, it wouldn't matter what fan base it was, the Eagles or Chiefs last year. Whoever lost the game would have been mad about that call. And honestly, I get it. Because there is so much inconsistency with officiating. That's the thing that drives you nuts as a fan and as a player. There's so much inconsistency with the officiating crew. So I understand the frustration with the officials. I truly do. But to talk about one call at the end of a game like the Chiefs are, when the officials actually got it right, that part is disturbing to me. If the officials flat out blew the call like they did the week before when MVS was clearly interfered with, and by the way, we documented 4 calls the officials screwed up in the final 60 seconds of that game. 2 were against helped the Chiefs and 2 hurt the Chiefs. So it was fair all the way around. It was just bad. It was inconsistent both ways, right? And Mahomes didn't come out bitching and moaning about that play, did he?
No.
He took the high road. But he wanted to win this game yesterday so bad because, you know why? It's him versus Josh Allen. It's the Bills and the Chiefs. There's a rivalry there. The Green Bay game, that's not a rivalry. It's a road game, blah, blah. It's at home, your Arrowhead. And on top of that, the Chiefs had to win yesterday, more than likely had to win yesterday, to have a chance at the one seed. Everything's still in front of them, though. Other than the one seed, everything's still in front of this team. Despite everything that happened yesterday, everything is still in front of this team. They're 8-5. If they win out, they win the division. Simple as that. They win the next 4 games, which they should be favored in all 4, then they got the Patriots on the road, they got the Raiders at home, the Bengals at home, although Jake Browning looks really good, and then at the Chargers, and Justin Herbert has a finger injury. He left the game yesterday, and the Chiefs usually beat the Chargers. So if the Chiefs just take care of their business and win the next 4 games, it doesn't matter what anybody else does. The Chiefs will be, at worst, the number 3 seed in AFC, because right now they're tied with the Jaguars for the 3 seed. They might not have the 1 or the 2. They might not get to host the AFC title game. You know what? That's just not something that's given to you every year. The Chiefs have done something no other team in NFL history has done. 5 straight AFC title games at home. At some point, we knew that streak was going to come to an end. It looks like that's the case this year. Now, watch the Chiefs end up doing. Watch what happens. The Chiefs end up winning they go ahead and win the 1 road game, right? So they're the 3 seed. They beat the 2, but the 1 loses, and the Chiefs get the AFC title game at home again. There's all kinds of. The Chiefs could be the 4 seed. And still host the AFC title game. They can.
Yeah.
Because
they were
upsets.
Not the number 1 seed every time they hosted.
They were not. A lot of Chiefs fans don't remember that. The Chiefs were not the number 1 seed and got a bye every year when they've hosted the AFC title game. That has not been the case. There have been a few times they've been the 2 seed. And things have fallen right. The Titans got beat in the divisional round. The Ravens got beat 1 year when they both were 1 seeds. So the Chiefs still can Even if they're the three or the four, there is scenarios where they can host the AFC title game again. The thing is, they're going to have to, as a three seed, they're going to have to be on the road at least once for sure. At least once. Well, you think so. I guess technically you don't.
Technically, you don't.
If you're
seven
a three,
could beat two.
That's right. If seven beats two and three beats six and the Chiefs are the three, then the Chiefs may still not have to play a road game. And Tony Romo at the end of the game apparently doesn't know how the thing works when he talked about the standings. And he still didn't get it. Nance was trying to correct him ever so slightly when he says, well, the Bills, he goes, I think there'd be a tremendous out and they could be hosting in the playoffs. And Nance is like, yeah, but they got a ways to catch the Dolphins. And he's like, well, they beat the Dolphins earlier. Like, Tony, it doesn't matter. The Chiefs can be 8-9. If they win the division, they're getting a home game against a team that's 11-6. Which I know you hate, but it's true.
Yeah.
The division winner, automatically, it's a home game. Chiefs fans, some of them don't still understand that. The top four, the teams that win the division are seeded 1, 2, 3, 4. Then you seed the wild cards 5, 6, 7. So it doesn't matter if the Bills have a better record than the Chiefs. If the Bills don't win the division, the Bills are coming to Arrowhead. Simple as that.
Yeah.
The Chiefs still have a one-game lead over the Bills. So the Chiefs still would host the Bills in the AFC playoffs if that were to happen. The only way it wouldn't happen is if the Bills win the division and catch the Dolphins. Then the Bills would be, well, and even if they went out and win the division, the Chiefs went out, they still have a better record. So a lot of people are all confused on these overall records things. The overall records don't mean jack squat except for the top four teams in their division leaders. And then you have to seed the wildcard teams by records. But the wildcard records have nothing to do with the division leaders. It has nothing to do with it.
No.
So let's make that clear. So the Chiefs, to simplify this, if they win their next four games, they'll be 12-5. They will be the three seed, maybe the two seed. Probably not the one. Probably not the one.
Yeah.
But the Ravens aren't exactly gangbusters here. They got to play the Dolphins. There's a loss for one of those two. The Niners play the Ravens as well. The Ravens have a couple of tough games yet. Dolphins might end up getting the one. Ravens might end up being tied with the Chiefs. The Chiefs get a tiebreaker. Chiefs might end up being the two after all. And then Tua gets hurt in the divisional round, and then Dolphins lose, and the Chiefs host the AFC title game. All of that stuff is still out there. But here's the thing. As you're listening to me explain this to you, aren't you wondering the same thing I'm wondering while I'm talking? Yeah, they can win the next four games, but why do we believe they will? Like, exactly. why do we believe the Chiefs are going to win the next four games? They go to New England, which they should win, but you thought you should have won at Green Bay. You go to New England, you should win. New England will have three extra days to prepare. The third straight week, the Chiefs will have to face an opponent that had plenty of rest and plenty of time to prepare for them. Okay? Then they get the Raiders at home. The Raiders are up 14-0 on this team in Vegas. They have no Isaiah Pacheco. Who knows where we're at there and how many more injuries we may have. Raiders at home. The Bengals, we wrote them off like everybody else, as Booger McFarland's accurately pointing out. Huh, what do you know? We actually let the Bengals continue to play with a backup quarterback, and they've rallied, and they're playing pretty well, and they beat the Colts yesterday by 21. The Bengal game, now you're like, oh, you know what? Maybe that's not going to be an easy one for the Chiefs.
No.
And then to go to the Chargers, who knows what's on the line at that time. The Broncos are playing good defense right now, and they're doing complementary offense. So the Broncos are only a game behind the Chiefs. I don't know who owns the tiebreaker, because the Chiefs beat the Broncos once. The Broncos beat the Chiefs. I would guess the Chiefs have the tiebreaker. I don't know that for sure. But a lot of that depends on what happens the rest of the way. The point I'm trying to make here is the division should have been easily over by now. It's not. But the Chiefs are still in control. But why do we think, even though the Patriots have a bad record, the Raiders have a losing record, the Bengals are barely above 500, and the Chargers are 5-8, why do we believe the Chiefs are going to win all four of those games? Because the other team's so bad? The Steelers just lost to 2-10 Arizona, 2-10 New England at home. And you may sit here and say, yeah, but the Steelers aren't good offensively. Are the Chiefs? The Steelers and the Chiefs are similar. The Steelers play great defense, lower scoring games, and their offense struggles. The Chiefs' defense is really good, and the offense struggles. I think the Chiefs' offense is better than the Steelers' offense, but they are comparable from the standpoint of they don't score a lot of points anymore. The Chiefs scored 17 yesterday. The Chiefs' defense held the Bills at 20. That should have been good enough. It should have been good enough. The Chiefs are hardly even getting to 20 points now offensively. They had 9 in Denver and 5 turnovers. So, Everything's still in front of them. But here's my question. Is this a great thing that happened to the Chiefs yesterday or a horrible thing? Is it a great thing from the standpoint that the Chiefs went ahead and blew out the frustration? Mahomes feels better about belly aching and complaining and cussing and whatever else, which I don't blame him for being upset. I'm not going to sit here and throw Mahomes under the bus. The guy's been a class act, a model citizen. He's a competitor. As I've said for a few weeks, and you have as well, Dusty, he's better than me because I would already lost it. I would have been screaming at my receivers. I would have done what Derek Carr did with Chris Olave a few weeks ago for the Saints, which I don't blame Derek Carr. Chris Olave quit running a route. As a leader, you have a right to get on him, and maybe Mahomes does on the sideline or in the locker room. But he hasn't thrown anybody under the bus publicly except for the official yesterday. Let's hear from Patrick Mahomes on the call against Tony. Kadarius Tony, ladies and gentlemen, if you have eyes, and by the way, if you think that Kadarius Tony was not offsides yesterday, or you think that that call should not have been made, then there's no point to have officials. There is no reason to have the stripes. There's just go ahead and call our own fouls and move on. It didn't have any impact on the play. You'll hear Mahomes say something, I think, about that. It doesn't matter. I don't like it either when there's a hold 30 yards behind the line of scrimmage. But if it's a hold, it's a hold. We can't be sitting here. I'm so sick of the, well, it's the final 2 minutes. You can't call that. Where the hell in the rule book does it say that? Basketball. Well, you call it for the first 46 minutes, but not the last two. So you can just maul people in the final 2 minutes? A foul is a foul. If there is a violation of a rule, it's a violation of the rule. That's what the officials are supposed to do. I didn't know they could just walk off the field with 2 minutes to play and call it a day. And by the way, it isn't officials' fault that a wide receiver isn't smart enough to line up on the line of scrimmage the right way. Why is that the officials' fault? Second thing, and Andy Reid complained about this afterwards, and I was like, dear God, come on now. This is going to make you guys look horrible across the board, except for Chiefs fans. You're going to look horrible across the country. And honestly, you look horrible to some Chiefs fans, including myself, and I'm a big Chiefs fan. I don't care. Honestly, I don't. If you sit here and you tell me, well, they didn't warn us. Don't you know the rules? Like, if I don't know when the officials started doing this, how many years ago, where the receiver would check with the side judge and be like, hey, am I good, thumbs up or not? This happened in a Monday Night Football game last year between the Giants and the Commanders. Commanders are ticked off because the guy actually turned. I didn't see Tony turn and get a thumbs up. I didn't see it yesterday.
There's Tracy a tweet Wolfson, out there from two different people. Tracy Wolfson actually confirmed what somebody else said.
Right.
That he did.
Others have said he didn't.
I have no idea. I didn't see it.
I don't know. I didn't see it on the TV.
Yeah.
But I remember watching Commanders Giants last year where the receiver who was close to the official on the far sideline, he looked and there was a thumbs up. The receiver pointed thumbs up like he's good. And then he went. The Commanders scored a touchdown, I believe it was, and they called offsides on it. And he was like, after the game, he's like, they told me I was good, and then he still called it on me. I don't think that happened yesterday at all. But here's my thing. I don't understand that anyway. Why don't the corners and the defensive ends check with the officials, say, hey, am I good? Why does the offense get the warning? Why does Andy Reid owed any kind of warning? I mean, I don't know. This is the last thing I checked. Do we warn Donovan Smith not to hold before every play? Do we warn Juwan Taylor not to false start before every play? Do we warn center Creed Humphrey not to move the ball prematurely before every play? Do we warn Patrick Mahomes to not intentionally ground the football on every play? Do we warn the cornerback not to hold down the field? Do we warn anybody else on the field?
Not that I know of.
Then why are we warning wide receivers? Hello, you have a brain, use it.
That's my thing is like,
if you're not sure, line up a little further back.
Yeah, it's like, look where the football is at. And I think,
how many years have these people played football?
I think a lot of that is actually, am I on the line the right way for formation?
For a formation.
It's not, am I offside?
Right.
It's, am I on the line for formation? Because you have to have seven on the line for formation, right?
Right.
And so it's like, am I in the right spot here?
Yes.
It's most of them are not checking if they're too far.
Yes.
Which clearly Kadarius Toney was.
They're usually checking, do I need to move up so it's a legal formation?
Yeah.
See, and that's something that's being misconstrued by Andy Reid after the game yesterday.
Yes.
And honestly, Patrick Mahomes a little bit too. Let's hear from Patrick Mahomes first and then Andy Reid listen, this is a horrible look for the Chiefs, in my opinion. It's a horrible look. Listen, the time for Mahomes to throw the officials under the bus was last week.
Absolutely.
He's a week late. You know what this is? It's pretty simple. This is a coach and a quarterback that are frustrated because of their own play. And the officials, like usual, get the wrath. Are they inconsistent? Yes. Are they is the officiating in the NFL great? No. Do they good job sometimes? Yes. Are they perfect? No. Are the Chiefs perfect? No. Wouldn't it be nice for an official to actually, if they actually could interview the officials after the game, like as a press conference where we could watch them on camera? Because there is like officials, there's some reporters get asked questions, the officiating crew after the game. They try to explain their penalties, which weren't explained very well last week in that Packer game. But wouldn't it be great for an official to say, you know what, go ahead, give me a camera, bring it over here. I'm tired of this as an official. I just want everybody to know. Listen, or an official about ready to retire. He knows it's his last game. And just pull up a camera and said, here, put the camera on me. And let me say something. We get paid a hell of a lot less than these professional athletes. We're expected to be perfect. But do you see us after every game criticize what they do? Nope. Here's Mahomes.
Obviously tough to swallow. I mean, not only for me, but just for football in general. I mean, just to take away greatness like that. I mean, for a guy like Travis to make a play like that, and who knows if we win. But as I know, as fans, you want to see the guys on the field decide the game. And that's why last week I didn't say anything about the flag. They didn't get called on Marquez. And so, I mean, they're human, man. They make mistakes. But, I mean, it's every week we're talking about something, and all I can do is go out there and give everything I have. And I'm proud of the guys because that's what we did. And it was another great football game that just ended like that. It's just tough to swallow. It's the call, man. Just in that moment, I mean, it's not even for myself or for me. It's just I know how much everybody puts into this game, and for it to happen on a flag change the outcome of a game in that moment. I mean, I've played 7 years, never had offense all sides called. I mean, that's elementary school. We talk about. I mean, you point to the ref, do all that different type of stuff, and it doesn't get called. And if it does, they warn you, and there was no warning throughout the entire game. And then you wait till there's a minute left in the game to make a call like that. It's just tough, man. It's lost for words, man. It's just tough because regardless if we win or lose, man, just for the end of it with another game, and we're talking about the refs, man. It's just not what we want for the NFL and for football.
I agree with the last thing he said. It's not good for the NFL to always have controversy. It's not good for the NFL to have really bad calls at the end of a game that helps determine the game. I agree with that last point Mahomes made. The rest of it is just him being emotional because they lost. But the thing is, they got the call right. That call is correct yesterday. And if there's a Chiefs fan that thinks that call... what's funny is, I haven't heard a Chiefs fan say that was the wrong call. I've seen Chiefs fans say you shouldn't call it. You shouldn't decide the game with the call. And then I see Chiefs fans with the comeback. Vaughn Miller was offsides two plays later. Okay, this is where you totally show that you don't know anything about football if you think that. First of all, there's no camera straight down the line of scrimmage that people are posting online. Second of all, they're going by a blue line, which is not official, that is stated on the game broadcast because that is generated by a computer, by the CBS sports team, all right, that is not official. And by the way, you don't look at the line, people. You look at where the ball is. And if you look at the play two plays later, Devon Miller supposedly was offsides. First of all, the ball isn't even up to the blue line. The ball is actually closer to Treed Humphrey. And Von Miller is not offsides. Nowhere is he offsides on the play. And then there are people actually saying he was a full step offsides more so than Tony. Like, whoa, you must be drunk as a skunk or you have the worst eyes in America and you want to tell officials how to do their job? You need to get your eyes checked. It's such... I'm going to say this. I've said it before and I will say it again. And my oldest and I were talking about this after the game, and he totally agreed with me. He was like, Dad, they got it right. It's like, what the hell are we complaining about? I'm like, I know. I hear you. It's just frustration. This is what it is. It's frustration because the Chiefs haven't done what they're supposed to do. And now we're throwing poor official under the bus because he's supposed to warn a guy that should be smart enough to not line up past the line of scrimmage. It's the ref's fault. That's no accountability. There's no accountability. You're letting Kadarius Tony have a free pass, Chiefs. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes. You should be looking at Kadarius Tony. That's who you should be pointing the finger at. And I don't say you should point the finger, but you should bring them around, put your arm around them, say, hey, young man, what the hell were you doing? Instead of yelling and ranting and raving about an official who actually got the call right, or arguing about, well, sometimes they warn us, but they didn't this time, and we feel so bad. And when you have to rationalize, well, they called that, but they missed the play two plays later, and that was just as bad. It wasn't. Who complains after a ball game about the officiating? Who is the main source of complaining after a sports game?
It's obviously the losing team.
It's always the losing team. It is the losing team's coach, players, fan base. It is always the losers. Did the Chiefs complain about officiating in the Super Bowl after they won last year? No. Did the Chiefs complain and go ape crap after they beat the Bengals in the AFC title game last year after Mahomes got shoved out of bounds? No. Did the Chiefs complain about the loss to the Packers and focused on one call instead of two others that favored them? Of course they did, because they lost. If they win the game yesterday and that call is not made, you know who's complaining today? Buffalo Bills fans are going, why wasn't Kadarius Toney called offsides?
Yeah.
And now the official did mess up. And now he's going to be scrutinized, and he might lose his job because he screwed up. His job is not to appease Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid or Kadarius Toney because he's not smart enough to line up on the line of scrimmage correctly. His job is to do his job. His job is to call it the right way. He got this right. And I think Patrick Mahomes owes an apology to the official, the specific official. He owes him an apology because the guy that screwed up was not that guy. That was Kadarius Toney. It's called accountability. Here's Andy Reid after the game.
Very disappointed that it ended the way it did. And normally I'll get, I never use any of this as excuses, but normally I get a warning before something like that happens in a big game. A bit embarrassing in the National Football League for that to take place. Normally, if it's even close, you get a warning. The head coach gets a warning. I mean, that normally, so I don't know. I didn't have a protractor out there, but it's a bit embarrassing.
Terry McAuley is a Hall of Fame football official. He was on Sunday Night Football last night. He does a pretty good job, and he'll throw the officials under the bus when they get it wrong. Mm-hmm. He will. He did it during the Packer-Chiefs game last Sunday night. He said, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, that's all wrong. They asked him about that play yesterday, and he said, well, he clearly is offsides. They got it right. And they said, well, what about Andy Reid and the Chiefs talking about a warning? He said, that was the case through last year that you would usually do warnings. He said, that is not part of it anymore. The warnings are not part of it anymore. And he said, and then they said, well, what about this being the first time they've seen offensive sides, offensive player lining up offsides? First time they've seen it. Terry McAuley said, and he was on top of his stuff, people. He said, it's all happened 11 times this year. So when Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes sit here and say, I've never seen it happen before, well, you might not see it happen in your game.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it hasn't happened before. See, that's the rose-colored glasses of the player and the coach as well. It's happened now 12 times. An offensive player was lined up offsides. That has been called 12 times. Terry McAuley, okay, who I think knows what he's talking about, sits here. He says on national television, why would he lie about it? He says that the warnings, that whole that warning stuff ended at the end of last year. It was a change they made going into this year. Now, if Terry McAuley's telling the truth, that means Andy Reid doesn't know the damn rules.
Yeah.
Or it means that the officials are still giving warnings when they're not supposed to,
yeah.
And thus Andy Reid expects one when he doesn't get it. And then that would be on the officials for not carrying out the rules they're supposed to do. But the reason she's lost yesterday has nothing to do with the officiating. It's Kadarius Toney lining off sides cost you the touchdown. You also still had two plays after that, and it was a train wreck. Okay? So score more than 17 points. Don't go 3-and-out on offense after your defense gets back-to-back 3-and-outs. I mean, we could go on and on at who made mistakes. The bottom line is this. The Chiefs lost. And it's in the same thing every time they lose. They make mistakes, untimely penalties, turnovers, can't catch the ball. The officials can't play for you.
No.
So where do you go from here? I said this could be great. It could be bad. The great part would be, you know what? You get out of your system. Mahomes feels better. He finally vents. Now he's ticked off. Now he might play like MVP the rest of the year. This might help the Chiefs rally the wagons, circle the wagons, and play great football the rest of the year. We might look back and the Chiefs are hoisting the Lombardi, and we're sitting there going, you know, there was a turning point when Mahomes finally just blew up. That's what this team needed. Or this team ends up somehow blowing the division. They don't make the playoffs, and people are going to point, that's when we lost everything. The sky is literally falling because Chris Jones was having a press conference yesterday after the game, and literally a ceiling tile fell from the sky and landed on a reporter, believe it or not. And somebody said, huh, the sky is actually falling. Despite all these horrible things that happened, you would think the Chiefs are 5-8. They're 8-5. They still lead the division by a full game. Nobody can catch him if they win the next four. So what stands out to you with all of this? I mean, is it just a bunch of complaining and whining? Because is it just about frustration and that's why the officials catching this? Or is it that the Chiefs truly believe they were wronged?
I think it's built up with some, I think with Mahomes, probably what happened last week and the fact he didn't say anything about it and kind of just took the high road. And
I wish he would have blown up after last week's game.
It'd have been nice. I'm not going to sit here. Mahomes was visibly upset, obviously, at the end of the game.
And by the way, during the game, he was visibly upset. He was really ticked at MBS on one play. This was growing within the game.
He was visibly upset with his own guys.
He was showing more frustration through this game than any other game I've seen, and it just kept building.
Yeah, and so all of that. You know, I come out here Sunday night, get everything put together, and so I was kind of – I don't listen to the press conference right after the game because I know I'm going to listen to him later at night. So I listened to Mahomes specifically because I wanted to see what he was upset about. I knew that everybody was saying it was the offensive play, but then somebody said it was because he thought Von Miller was offsides. I don't think that's what he was complaining about.
That was not what he was complaining about.
And it wasn't. And so I wanted to listen to the press conference, and then he – says what he says, and then he expands that there's two answers in that one cut that you played. He expands upon it, and I'm like, okay, now we're maybe going a little bit too far with it, and you made your point, but I knew that Mahomes was frustrated, and I'm going to give him a pass because he doesn't do that very much.
Yes.
He is very reserved most of the time, usually puts the onus on himself. I was pissed off at Andy Reid's response and his press conference last night.
I wasn't very happy.
If I'm going to put it like I really feel about it, I'm sitting here listening to this thing, and that's his first thing, is he comes out with this and says, usually I get a warning. This is embarrassing for the NFL.
No excuses.
No, this press conference is embarrassing for you because you don't know the damn rules. You know that your guy was lined up offsides, and you're not taking accountability for it. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Andy Reid usually does.
Yes.
He always says, it's my responsibility. I got to fix it. Apparently, he didn't want to fix it, and it wasn't his responsibility last night. At least I got a different cut from him, I guess, that it wasn't just my responsibility.
True.
That's fun that I got something different from him. But he doubled down, too. And then somebody asked him about, hey, the play that you ran, is that something that was improvised by Travis? And then he's like, I can't even believe you asked me that right now. And didn't really answer any more questions the rest of the way. It was a 2.5-minute press conference.
Because he's super frustrated.
And he's just yelling and screaming and saying that they got it wrong. No, you got it wrong. And you've gotten your offense wrong half of this year. Fix it. Do what you're supposed to do. Don't complain about one call by an official in a game when you turned the ball over twice again and had penalties that hurt you again.
Drop passes
again. This has not been fixed. And I know that this is probably frustration with Andy Reid, too.
Yes.
And I'm sure he's tired of it as well. But I'm like, you've got to be better than that. And I can understand your quarterback being frustrated about it. But I can't sit here with a 2.5-minute press conference and you're just yelling and screaming and mad and not taking accountability at all for what actually happened on the field. Because that was not – it drives me nuts, too, when I read the tweets that say, well, this is the fourth time the Chiefs have had a penalty that was that cost them a game-winning play. I mean, you don't know that this was a game-winning play.
No, you don't.
There was over a minute left for the Bills to go score and beat you. And, yeah, the defense is playing well. Probably wouldn't have happened the way the second half went. But that's not a fact that it's a game-winning play. And so I was out here last night. I'm like, I'm tired of it, dude. Like, I can't with this blaming the official for making the correct call.
He made the right call.
and then you're whining and complaining because it never happens. Well, don't do it wrong then. Kadarius Toney, he was not in for the final two plays. You think if he didn't have that penalty right there that he would have been taken out of the game? They're left frustrated with Kadarius Toney,
sure
too, so he's not playing the last two plays.
Right.
And it's like, obviously, you know he did something wrong because you didn't let him go back out into the game. And it's like, what, now we're going to complain about it in the post game and just be like, the official shouldn't have made the call. Yeah, he should have. He's supposed to do his job. And well, it was an offside. And I'm tired of you complaining about it.
I hear you. And when Mahomes says, well, I haven't seen this in 7 years in the league, and Andy Reid, I haven't seen it. Well, no, because you haven't had a receiver dumb enough to line up that far offsides. I mean, the reason you haven't seen it is because most guys know they don't need to line up that way. The reason you've never seen it is because it's not because of the officials. It's because you didn't have a receiver silly enough to be lined up across and past the ball. That's why you've never seen it. Dear God, could you at least somehow make that man responsible for his actions? Kadarius Toney, 19? I mean, the guy was lined up. It wasn't questionable. It was absolutely offsides. I can't even believe that we've wasted so much time arguing. Like, I understand all the people complain about the wrong calls, but amazing to me that the biggest uproar about officiating and the biggest blow-up this entire NFL season is after an actual, clear-as-day, correct call. I mean, it is ridiculous to me. By the way, Peter Schrager put this out on Twitter. The last time the Chiefs were called for offensive offsides was 1995. So that must be the last time the Chiefs had a dumb person on the offense. Sorry, I said it.
Was it Lake Dawson?
No, Jeff Criswell. Jeff Criswell. But he was an offensive lineman, so I'm not quite sure what the deal was there. Because offensive linemen can be lined up offsides. We've seen Jawan Taylor in the backfield. Listen, I think there's something that we have overlooked, and I do want to put this out here. This is a buildup of frustration, and I think a lot of people, what they look at is they say it's a buildup of frustration because the Chiefs keep shooting themselves in the foot. The drop passes, the untimely penalties, the frustrated with the receivers not getting open, frustrated with this or that. But this goes all the way back to week one. This goes all the way back to week one. And this is where I'm not trying to make excuses for Andy Reid, but I should point this out in his defense. Go back to week one. Jawan Taylor's offsides every play, right? That's what everybody's talking about. Collinsworth and Tirico are pointing out over and over and over, okay? What happened in week two?
They overcorrected. And penalized him like crazy.
He has 16 holding penalties going into this week at offensive lineman. They said I don't know what it was, but he has half of the whole offensive holding penalties for tackles this year, Jawan Taylor. He has the most false starts of any tackle in the National Football League. And yet I watched the Eagles last night against the Dallas Cowboys, and I see Lane Johnson lined up 3 yards in the backfield. What's really hilarious is if you watch the Kadarius Toney play, the overhead shot, I mean, and it shows he's clearly offsides. Jawan Taylor has his right foot like behind Mahomes almost.
Yeah.
I mean, Jawan Taylor's offsides on this play by a mile. And then other times he's not nearly that far back and they call it. There's the inconsistency. There's the frustration. So the Chiefs have been frustrated since week one with the whole picking on Jawan Taylor, which Jawan Taylor deserves the penalties, to be honest with you. But I will say, in defense of the Chiefs a little bit, as I saw the left and right tackle for the Bills move early and do exactly what Jawan Taylor does, and they didn't get called for it. So there's the consistency or inconsistencies that drive coaches and teams nuts. And the other thing that it is, you were talking about the Jawan Taylor stuff, right? And so that over the whole season, that has frustrated the Chiefs, okay? They've also been frustrated, clearly, just the week prior to this game, when MVS is absolutely mugged, and there's no call, and should have been first and goal at the 5 for the Chiefs, of a chance to perhaps tie the game and force overtime. This happened just 7 days prior. So you've got week one against the Lions where all that stuff happened. And then all the drops, of course, was a big thing. Then you go into week two. They overcorrect with Jawan Taylor. It continues for a while. Then it gets a little bit better. Then there's the occasional, we got to throw one on Taylor every once in a while. Then the next thing you know, you've got all the horrible calls in the final 60 seconds against the Packers. And now you play the Bills. And what makes it even worse is it wasn't not only was it a touchdown, but it was an amazing play. Yeah. That I think adds to the fact you complain about it even more because you hate to see that play taken away. And when Patrick Mahomes says, well, that takes away a great play from a great Hall of Famer and blah, blah, blah. Once again, you're talking to
you
the wrong
took
person.
It away yourself.
Talk to your 19 because 19 is the one that scored the touchdown, but he was lined up offsides. That's on 19. You want to get mad about somebody losing a play for a tight end to make some history for an amazing play in Chiefs highlight history. The reason it happens is because your silly receiver can't line up onsides the right way. You want to blame somebody for screwing up the play? It's the guy that actually scored the touchdown, Kadarius Toney, who, by the way, did nothing except run down the field, and then Kelce threw him the lateral. So I get where the Chiefs are coming from. I think there is something to Andy's frustration because he, just like Mahomes, they're in a similar boat. Okay, they get criticized the most. Quarterback and coach get criticized the most after a loss. They even get criticized sometimes when they win. It's not good enough. They do get a lot of credit when they win, especially the quarterback. Andy Reid doesn't maybe get as much credit as he deserves sometimes. Andy Reid has always taken the high road, most of the time anyway. So is Patrick Mahomes. All this time, they've taken the high road. It's my responsibility. As you said, it's a boring answer. You get tired of it, but it was always the same answer. It's my responsibility. We'll get it fixed. You expect him to say that last night. He didn't. Oh my God, there's a curveball. Well, now I'm not happy with his comment. And Andy Reid could be sitting there going, well, you complain about me. He's always saying the same thing every week, and now I give you something new, and now you don't like that. So why don't I just cancel my press conferences? Which, you know what? I get it. If I'm a coach, I get frustrated with that too, because there's inconsistencies from the media as well. And so Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, I think this was just the blowing up point. You have been so frustrated with the officials throughout the year. The Chiefs, it is absolutely documented. The Chiefs are one of the most penalized teams in the league, which that could be coaching. It could be the players. It could be they're being singled out. I don't know. And yet people across America say the Chiefs get all the calls, which tells you how clueless they are. They're caught up on a call here, a call there.
I made a joke last night. I was like, is the NFL overcorrecting because everybody's mad because the Chiefs supposedly are getting all the calls?
Maybe. Yeah. Carl Jeffers got booed to where he almost cried last year. Maybe I bet he enjoyed calling that offsides on Tony and the Chiefs deep down, because guess what? Officials are human. And the other thing I'll say about Patrick Mahomes, part of me was glad he blew up and he was upset and he got it out of his system. I have no problem with slamming the helmet on the sideline. He can say what he wants after the game. I don't agree with him at all. I mean, just because a ref called the right call, took away a play from a great Hall of Fame tight end, that's not the official's concern. Okay, no. He did his job just like Mahomes supposed to do his job, and Kelce's supposed to do his job, and Tony's supposed to do his job, and don't line up offsides. But anywho, I digress from that standpoint. But the Kansas City Chiefs, you got to have accountability. There don't seem to be any public accountability for Kadarius Toney. You know what Kadarius Toney should have said? And I don't know if he did. You know what he should have done? He should have been the guy that took the high road and made everybody else look like idiots on his own team. He should have come out right after the game and said, listen, that is not on the official. I lined up wrong. That's my bad. I can't believe I did it. It was a tremendous boneheaded mistake. It won't happen again. It's my responsibility, and I'll fix it. Yeah. Kadarius Toney would look better than Mahomes and Reed, and he's the one that made the mistake, if he would come out. But he didn't, because the Chiefs receivers have not been accountable all year long. They haven't come out themselves and been accountable. I mentioned the Sky Moore thing where he talks about the route. Like, dude, you didn't even run hard on the route, and you don't even mention that. And if your coach and your quarterback now are not going to place accountability on 19 for what he did on that play, what does that tell the rest of the team?
Just, you know, if I make
it's not our fault.
It's not our fault.
Not my fault. Yeah. And that's something I never thought the Chiefs would have a problem with, because Andy Reid's a great coach, Patrick Mahomes a great quarterback. And so while I'm okay with him venting his frustration, I understand Andy Reid's frustrated, and he says he's embarrassed and no excuses but, and he blames the officiating. I understand the frustration. But on this particular play, they're all wrong. That was the correct call. Now, here's the thing that really bothered me, and I've seen it today, and it really bothers me. And I know he's caught up in the moment, and I know he's very emotional. But Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen.
Yeah, that.
I did not like what I saw after the game when they went to embrace. Because if you haven't seen the video today and you hear the audio, this is where, and once again, I understand Mahomes is riled up and he's emotional. I get it. I get as emotional as anybody else out there. So trust me, I get it. If there's anybody that gets it, I would get that part of it. Josh Allen lost a horrible, horrible, horrible game, where they got beat in the final 13 seconds. If there was ever a time for Josh Allen to be a complete jackass, it was his chance to do it after that game. He didn't have to go shake Mahomes' hand. He didn't have to tell him congratulations. He could have been all upset about a call early in the game that cost him, which I'm sure there was one. And he took the high road. He came right across, and he congratulated Mahomes. And Mahomes did the high road when he lost to the Bengals, you know, in a close game and lost in overtime with Joe Burrow. So Mahomes and Allen have been pretty much class acts, I think. They've got a good relationship. They've golfed together. They're friends. But have you seen the video where he went to Josh Allen? Maybe he said good game initially, but then he just said, that's the worst call I've ever seen. And then Mahomes went on to say effing terrible about 15 times as he was going and talking to other players. I'm going to tell you right now, I think there are some players on the Bills that lost some respect for Patrick Mahomes because of that. Mm-hmm. And because Josh Allen doesn't do that. Okay. And this wasn't a game that decided whether your season stayed alive, like what happened with the Bills a few years back. Right. So I think it's a really, really bad look what Mahomes did. And on the field after the game, kept saying effing terrible. I do get that he's frustrated. I understand he says that was effing terrible, man. Can't believe they called that. And then, hey, great game, great game. Yeah. Because that's what I expect Mahomes to do. And that wasn't the case. And Josh Allen almost was kind of like, you know, I got to get away from this guy.
It's like,
Josh Allen's like, okay, dude, I didn't make the call, man. I think Josh Allen's like, dude, I didn't make the call, man. And by the way, you guys have kind of come out ahead on some of these things over the years, so I'm not going to really feel sorry for you. That's how I thought. If I was Josh Allen, that's what I would have said. Uh-huh. Like, Jesus, Patrick, you know how many things go your way and you're the anointed one? Give me a break. He was offsides. That's what I would have liked to have said if I was Josh Allen, probably. So that was a really bad look. I thought the whole thing was bad optics. Other than slamming the helmet on the sideline, I get it. Players do that all the time. Oh, actually, yeah. I like that Mahomes did that. I was actually like, hey, I get it. He's finally letting it go. It's healthy for him to let that go. If he chewed out a wide receiver on the sideline, I'd say, hallelujah, man. It's about time. I would have no problem with that. Some people criticize, like, can't do that in front of people. Whatever. He finally did it. No. Instead, he took out his frustration on an official, kept screaming at the official at the end of the game, then went screaming and yelling how effing terrible it was. And this is a bad look for Mahomes because he's so classy. He's handled it so well. And I do believe that he can get a pass because he's been so great his whole career. But this has nothing to do with the official. This is Patrick Mahomes frustrated with his wide receivers who can never get on the frickin' same page. MVS has played for this team for 2 full years now, and it's like he's never played with Mahomes. You want to talk about a guy that I'm about ready to just want to kick to the curb. Everyone wants to kick Sky Moore to the curb. Sky Moore is young. Maybe he can develop. MVS, I don't know what the hell he does for this team anymore. I really, truly don't. I mean, that guy sliding, slipping, falling, it looks like a circus clown out there sometimes. And he's made some big plays. He made some big plays in the Super Bowl in the playoffs last year, and maybe he'll figure it out. But this is all frustration. It's frustration that was pent up, built up, and it exploded. It's just like when in real life, people, if you have had something that's bothered you for so, so long, sometimes you eventually, what? Something small, your fuse has already been lit, and something small causes it to explode. And is it the small thing that actually is what you're mad about? No. Usually, it's a whole bunch of stuff that built up, and you blew your lid, not because your kid asked for something that you already told him no about. You're upset because work went bad the day before. Your wife yelled at you. Who knows what else? You're upset about various things, and then there is something that just absolutely finally ignites the whole thing, and it blows up in your face. And I think that's all this is. The Chiefs have been frustrated all year long with the officiating. Andy Reid has been. Patrick Mahomes has. The week before was horrible. Both ways, by the way. And they're also extremely frustrated because they have tried everything they can think of. They've worked extra time thinking they're going to fix this with the wide receivers. And at the end of the day, they simply haven't been able to do what they think they can do, and that is fix it. And that's why they blow up, because they're like, God, that was an amazing play that should be in the annual highlight reel every year for the next 100 years. And that was called. The audacity of the official to actually call. He didn't give me a warning. Why didn't he give me a warning? Well, I don't know. I think the receiver should kind of be able to tell that he's offsides, like a freaking foot past the ball. But again, it's the official's fault, not the player's fault. Thus, there's no accountability for the play.
Yeah, I was super frustrated when I saw the actual, because you saw him at the end of the game on TV, you know, go hug, and I couldn't tell, you know, you couldn't tell what he was saying to Josh Allen there at the end of the game, but I was super frustrated when I saw that, because it's like, Josh Allen doesn't care, dude. Like, this is not on him, and that's not the way you treat that handshake. Just say, hey, you know, tough one, good game, whatever, yeah. Move on.
Yeah.
And if you want to go vent in your press conference, you've got that coming up. So, dude, I know he can't drop the F-bomb in his press conference, so maybe that's why Maybe that's why he was doing that to Josh Allen. I don't know. Maybe that's why he was doing it on the field. I have no idea. You know, throwing
just,
the helmet.
He's fired up and emotional letting it out is what he's doing.
The throwing the helmet thing, you know, I agree. It happens. Will Howard did it at the end of the K-State Iowa State game, right? Yeah. Like, because they didn't get what they wanted there, and he was frustrated through his helmet. I mean, it happens. You see people do that. But, you know, I just, you gotta read it and understand that Josh Allen and the Bills are not going to have any sympathy for you. They're just not. And so, and I don't know, maybe because all the stuff he's done off the field with Josh Allen, he feels like, I'm just going to be honest with him and I can say what I want here. But, you know, there's people around you that are recording that on phones and all that stuff. So, I don't know. The whole thing was just, like you said, bad optics, and I didn't like any of it.
I didn't either.
It's like they made the right call. What are we screaming and yelling about?
If it was a egregious, egregious, horrible call, I'd probably be right there with them all along. But that's what's ironic to me. It's actually of how bad the officiating has been this year in the NFL. It just cracks me up, and it's ironic that it's a call the officials clearly got right.
Yes.
And that's what the Chiefs are whining about.
No question about it.
Which leads to the bad optics.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes said, as we played earlier, I've played 7 years in the National Football League and never had offensive offsides called. You wait until a minute left to make a call like that? No, they didn't wait a minute. That's when it happened, Patrick. They didn't wait 59 minutes. Just see, that type of comment makes it sound like the refs are out to get you. When you make a comment like that, you're making it. So the Chiefs within their locker room apparently have certainly thought that the officials are trying to screw them over. That's what I get out of that comment. You wait till a minute to make a call like that? No. Kadarius Toney waited 59 minutes to line up egregiously offsides, and then you call it. It just happened to be the final minute. And Alex Gold, he hosts a show in Kansas City, Sports Talk, and I agree with him. He says accountability is nowhere to be found at Arrowhead. Explains a lot of the mistakes this year. I think there's accountability there, certainly with Mahomes and Kelsey. And by the way, Kelsey, I don't know if he talked to anybody after the game, but I mean, that's the guy I figured would blow up. It's odd enough to me that Reed and Mahomes are in sync with each other with this thing, which makes me wonder if, I don't want to say it's all planned, but it is. I don't know if that's Reed backing up his quarterback by saying that, or Mahomes backing up his coach because he knows his coach is ticked off and he heard what Andy said and like, come on, you didn't give me a warning. And then that's when Mahomes
I think
went nuts.
The warning came in because of Andy.
Right.
His press conference was before Mahomes'. Yeah. And I think Mahomes might have gotten that from Andy, the warning part of it.
Right. So I don't know if he knew about any of that when he was yelling at the official the last 30 seconds. By the way, there's going to be some consequences to Patrick Mahomes, and he makes plenty of money. He's not going to get suspended. The league would be an idiot to do that. But he will get fined. He will get fined for his outburst.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it, I would think. Maybe no doubt about it. I think there is no doubt about it. He's going to get it. But and then calling out the officials where you're going to get the fine.
Yeah.
And Andy Reid's probably going to get one possibly. But Mahomes, it's just bad luck. And if you're a Chiefs fan and you're sitting here today and you're totally in agreement with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid about that call, I think all of you are wrong. Because they got it right. Now, if you want to twist it and rationalize it and say, well, I'm behind Mahomes and Reed because that's just them being pent up frustration. They finally let it out. And this is a collection of everything you said, Wade, about what happened week one and the picking on the Juwan Taylor situation and then the horrible DPI against MVS last week against Green Bay. You know, listen, I'm with you as well. I'll back that up if that's exactly what happened. But it is, they did damage to their brand yesterday.
Oh,
I'm going to tell you that
sure.
right now. The Chiefs did damage to their brand. Mahomes did damage to his brand a little bit. It's not like he's going to get cut for endorsement deals. But what I'm saying is now there are more and more people that were on the fence that might have been tweeners. Like, I like Mahomes, but yeah, they do complain a little bit. And the national media, they're always over the top. Like, this is – they're sour grapes, and they get all the calls anyway. This is so hilarious. Wah, wah, wah. Now I think some of the people on the fence are going, you know what? What the hell are they complaining about? And they don't understand the collective part of the season building up to this. And of course you won't if you don't follow the Chiefs on a regular basis.
Chiefs fan, and the optics are for the people that are not following the Chiefs, right? Like every single week.
Absolutely. All right, take a 30-second timeout, come back. KU, we'll stop talking Chiefs. It's just, it's upsetting and stressful.
Son of a...
Batteries are on sale now at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Don't wait till it won't start. Stop by today for a free battery test. We always install batteries for free, but right now, AC Delco batteries are on sale $20 off. If you do need a jump, we're happy to help you with that, too. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or online at KieberBrothers.com.
All right, now there's a tweet out there. Tony was offsides, but one of the strangest things about the situation is that not one but two CBS employees have tweeted out that, for what it's worth, can confirm that Kadarius Tony looked to the sideline, pointed as he lined up, and the official cannot comment whether the official acknowledged or signaled for him to move back. So take that for what it's worth. I'm sorry, but when you're lined up that far offsides, I don't think you need an official to help you.
No.
I mean, you should clearly know to back up. Now, if you want the official to help to get back close enough to be lined up so it's a legal formation, that might be something different. The NFL yesterday, the Buccaneers beat the Falcons 29-25. Buccaneers now lead the division, believe it or not, at 6-7. The Rams lose to the Ravens. Ravens a punt return overtime to win 37-31. Horrible clock management by a Super Bowl winning coach and a veteran quarterback by the Rams in that game. I didn't understand it. Lions lost to the Bears 28-13. Lions fall to 9-4. Lions are a nice story. They're a good team, but this is why I've said they're a pretender. They should have lost the Bears the first time. Bengals win 34-14 over the Colts. Bengals keeping their season alive. And Jake Browning was terrific again. Their backup quarterback, now the starter with Burrow out. Browns beat the Jaguars 31-27, so that helps the Chiefs a little bit. Saints beat the Panthers 28-6. The Jets beat the Texans 30-6. Texans, bad loss for them. C.J. Stroud left with a concussion. The exhilarating game of the day was the Vikings beating the Raiders with a field goal, 3-0. Well, all the rules favoring the offense, that's amazing. The Niners beat the Seahawks 28-16. Seahawks are all but dead. The Bills beat the Chiefs, as we know. The Bills keep their playoff hopes alive. They're a must-win for the Bills. As I said the other day, the Chiefs didn't have to win the game unless they wanted the one seed badly. Otherwise, it was much more important for the Bills because they're trying to fight for their playoff lives. Broncos beat the Chargers 24-7. Chargers 5-8. Broncos 7-6, a game behind the Chiefs. And Justin Herbert left the game with a finger injury. Cowboys, impressive, finally beat a team with a winning record, and they were very impressive in doing so over the Eagles, 33-13. Eagles and Cowboys are tied right now for the top of the division. Right now, the Cowboys would be the number, would be the division winner. However, if the Eagles win out, they will then have a better division record, and then the Eagles will be the NFC East champ. So despite the Eagles losing two games in a row and the Chiefs losing four of the last six, the Chiefs still control the division and the Eagles still control their division and getting at least the top two seed. So as bad as Eagle fans want to make it and Chiefs fans want to make it, there's still a lot of football to be played and still a lot of all your goals are still in front of you. Monday Night Football, tonight we have two games. I don't know why. Titans at the Dolphins, and the Packers are at the Giants. If you're a Chiefs fan, if you're still dreaming about a one seed, you got to cheer for the Titans tonight. Packers at the Giants. The ESPN game's Titans-Dolphins, Giants-Packers, the ABC game. All right. I'm exhausted, and it's only 10:19. Chiefs are exhausting me. KU wins the Border Showdown again.
Hawks just have to get the ball in, and they can put this one on the board. Final second trips off the clock, and you can rock. Chalk it up. The Jayhawks win. Kansas takes down Mizzou in the Hy-Vee Hoops Border Showdown.
KU ranked second in the country. They win 73-64. Missouri jumped out 15-6 lead. KU came back, had a big run to close out the first half and into the second half. Led by as many as 16, go on to win by 9. KJ Adams, Kevin McCullough each had 17. Hunter Dickinson, 13 points, 16 rebounds. Another double-double for Dickinson. KU head coach Bill Self on the win over their rival.
They were obviously better than us to start the game, and then we were a lot better the last 6 minutes, was it, and go on a 20-2 run. That was the difference in game. It's an even game other than that. So we made a lot of good basketball plays in the last 6 minutes of the first half. We started guarding them, and although our defense wasn't bad the whole game.
KU will be at Indiana coming almost Saturday, so they finally get a little bit of a break after a gauntlet of a schedule, and pretty impressive that they're 9-1 through that schedule. K-State men are 8-2, picked up a nice win, 75-60 at LSU on Saturday. Cam Carter, 19 of his 21 in the first half. He had three threes. Arthur Kaluma, double-double, 17-11. Tyler Perry, 14. Will McNair got the play. He had 13. Jerome Tang on blocking out the distractions of the Naquan Tomlin situation throughout the week.
But, you know, we love playing basketball and love being together. This is the time when you don't have to worry about the distractions. You just get to play. And I felt like our guys had a lot to play for, a lot to be focused for, a lot to be thankful for. That allowed them to put their energy in the right place.
Naquan Tomlin, by the way, graduated.
Yeah, as they were all in Baton Rouge,
that's
he's
right.
walking across the stage.
That's right, and he has entered the transfer portal. And believe it or not, KU has an open scholarship, just saying. So does Georgetown, West Virginia, some others. So we'll see where Naquan Tomlin goes to play college basketball. But he can play immediately because he hadn't played at all this year. So
grad transfer, he's good to go.
And that's very rare to get a guy of that talent to be available in the middle of a season. But how do you incorporate him into your team?
That's going to be the bigger issue is how do you get him to go in, because he hasn't played this year at all either.
That's right. Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. Wichita State men dropped to 7-3. They lose to South Dakota State 79-69. Number 13, K-State women are 9-1 as they make a big statement. They dominate Missouri 84-56 at the Bill Snyder Classic, St. Joe, Missouri. 36-12 third quarter blew it open. Ayoka Lee, 28 points, 9 rebounds. KU women picked up a win to improve to 5-4. They win at Wichita State 76-56. Shohei Ohtani is no longer a free agent. He signed the richest contract in Major League Baseball history by far on Saturday. The former Angel Ohtani is headed to the Dodgers on a 10-year, $700 million deal that averages out to $70 million a year. His former teammate, Mike Trout, previously had the highest, biggest ever baseball contract, 12 years, $426 million. The $70 million average per season blows out the previous record, which was Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer, each getting paid 43.3 on average with the Mets. Ohtani is the first player in Major League Baseball history who has been a unanimous MVP on multiple occasions, excelling as a pitcher and a hitter. He has a torn UCLA and his UCL. See, that's what from UCLA, you know, ties in there. UCL, torn UCL in his elbow, so he will only hit in 2024, hope to return to the mound in 2025. Ohtani, I saw this on a tweet. I haven't had a chance to research it to see if it's accurate or not, but Ohtani's average yearly salary of $70 million is higher than eight Major League Baseball teams' entire payroll, including the Royals.
Yeah, it was. I read that it was higher than two, but I didn't. Yeah. In the story that I looked at, and it was well higher than those two.
Yeah. So the Royals made
a move.
Crazy. The Royals made a move yesterday, adding left-handed reliever Will Smith on a reported 1-year, $5 million deal. Smith saved 22 games for the World Series champion Rangers this past season, but he was not their closer when they won it. Smith pitched 11 seasons in the big, mostly as a reliever. Actually started with the Royals back in 2012 as a starter. Moved to the bullpen in 2013. He was traded to the Brewers for Nori Aoki ahead of the 14 season. And I want just to say right now that there are two teams that now have a chance to win the World Series, and there's only two. The Kansas City Royals and the team that Will Smith is traded to midseason. That's who's going to win the World Series next year. You ready for that?
Yeah.
Book it.
Yep.
Now I'm going to bet it's the team he gets traded to.
Yeah.
But the last 3 years, he was with the Braves, the Astros, and then this past year, he was with the World Series champion.
Rangers. Yes.
So see if it'd be 4-for-4. And the Royals could pull off the shocker and win the World Series. By the way, this is why baseball's so messed up. There's so many things wrong with baseball. And I know it's not going to happen because the union is so strong. But there has to be a salary cap in baseball. And I said it last week before this big contract that baseball needs to learn from the most popular sport in America, and that's NFL. Look at the parity. You got teams every year that go from worst to first and first to last, and then different teams are in the playoffs, and sometimes the same teams. But you don't have very many dynasties in football. I mean, you got the Patriots, maybe the Chiefs, if you consider that. And yet baseball, it's almost like every year you know that the Dodgers are going to be there. You know that the Astros are going to be there. You know that the Yankees are, even if they have a down year, they're not going to be 60-102, right? And you know, whenever there's a high-touted free agent, you can say the exact same five teams every single time are interested. You don't even have to do research. It's whoever has the most money. And then some of these teams don't even care about the luxury tax. They'll pay the extra money, and so forth and so on. You know, in the National Football League, Patrick Mahomes, if he decided, I'm not going to sign with the Chiefs and be a free agent, any team in the National Football League could throw out as much money as they wanted Patrick Mahomes, but they have to stay within the cap, right? So every single team in the National Football League would have a chance to go get Patrick Mahomes. Does every team have a chance to get Shohei Ohtani?
Absolutely not.
Now, you could argue technically that they can. They could, you know, the Royals could spend more than their payroll on one player. And is Ohtani going to come play for you anyway? No. Because as long as there's the same offer out there at a bigger market or a better team, that's where he's going to go. But you have no chance in baseball, if you're a small market team, to shell a whole bunch of money to one guy and that guy doesn't perform, you're toast. Whereas the Yankees can just go ahead and write off contract after contract and keep bringing in guys like Juan Soto, or whoever it might be, and then he'll probably re-sign with the Yankees and they'll give him $500 million, whatever it might be, and you're sitting here going, why can't the Royals get good players? So the Royals' only chance they have is they got to draft, develop, make some shrewd trades, basically like 2015.
Yeah.
That's maybe lightning in a bottle they caught that year. And it's really tough. And that's why baseball stinks, because the really high-powered franchises, even if they have a down year, they're what? Ooh, they're barely under 500. I mean, Yankee fans are all like, oh, my God, nobody goes to the games because they're so bad. And they were 81-81, I believe. The Royals were what? 56-106, 58-104, whatever it was. And the Royals have no hope. There's no hope for the Royals to make the playoffs this year. Maybe there is a little bit, but is there a hope to win a championship? No. Yankees can be horrible, and they're going to go buy a few players and then maybe have some other guys ready to line up, and boom, they're going to be right there, and they're going to have a chance to get back to where they want to get. And that's in the Dodgers, of all people. They're already making the World Series almost every single year, or at least getting into the playoffs every single year, and have the best record almost every single year. The rich just get richer, and that's what Major League Baseball is. The Yankees get Juan Soto. The Dodgers get Shohei Ohtani. I mean, let's go ahead and have two different leagues. Let's have Major League Baseball, and then let's have the sub-tier Major League Baseball, and have the winners of each then face each other in the World Series. Because this is where we're getting. It's the haves and the have-nots. It's been this way for a while. There have been some small market teams that have fought through and broken through and done some things. By the way, the Texas Rangers are not a small market team. They spent tons of money on Corey Seager. And tons of money on...
they've been spending tons of money since they got Alex Rodriguez. Right.
Right. Like, so they spend tons of money, Josh, and it's Hamilton, usually blown up. Pitchers. It's blown up in their face, but this year it worked for them. They spent a lot of money on Marcus Semien. They overbid to get him, overpaid for him and Seager, but it worked. Finally, it worked this year for the Rangers. The Royals can't do that. There is no quick fix for the Royals. There's no quick fix for the Pirates. There's no quick fix for the Twins. There's no quick fix for the small market teams. And here's the thing. You may sit here and say that $700 million is insane for a contract for a player, and I agree. And it's 10 years, $70 million per year, and you may say that's insane. I agree. I will say this. L.A. is a huge market, and Ohtani is huge across the world. He's not just a American phenom. He is a worldwide phenom. I mean, for crying out loud, the whole continent of Asia knows who this guy is. He will more than likely, and I saw some people say, that the Dodgers will actually come out ahead financially on this deal because of all the money he'll bring in merchandise sales, and then people fill in the stadium and packing it, and they can raise their ticket prices now because they probably get a lot of people coming anyway because they're already good. So you may sit here and say, what a horrible deal this is by the Dodgers. No, it's not a horrible deal because they're going to make a lot of money off this thing, so they actually probably will be out okay. But the Royals can't do this, and other teams can't do this. Now, if Ohtani goes out and blows out his knee and he's done for his whole career, okay, yeah, then that blew up in their face.
Yeah.
But if he plays even 4, 5, 6 years of this 10-year contract, they're probably going to make their money back and then some, and they know that. But to offer him $27 million more per year than the next highest-paid guy sounds insane. But I'm going to tell you something. We talked about this last year when Burrow and Herbert got their contracts, right? And they went to $52 million. They restructured Mahomes to where he's right there around $52 million a year. I said it. You agreed with me that Mahomes should probably, based on what he does, and I know he's not having a great, great year this year, although he's had his highest completion percentage despite all the drops. Yeah. So it's not like he's horrible. That Mahomes is worth $70 million a year. I threw that number out. I said he's worth $70 million a year. If these guys are worth 50 and they haven't won anything, and Justin Herbert doesn't even won a playoff game, if Herbert's worth 50, Mahomes is worth 70. Well, you may sit here and say, what's baseball got to do with the NFL? The highest paid athlete now in the world, okay, in American sports at least, is Shohei Ohtani. 10 years, $700 million. You don't think Mahomes is going to get $70 million a year at some point? That's the bar now. The next time the Chiefs do the contract Mahomes, and when the cap expands and goes higher, which it will over the next few years, I will be willing to wager, I don't have $70 million to wager, but I'd be willing to wager that Patrick Mahomes, the bar, his agent's probably already talking about it, the bar for Patrick Mahomes is $70 million a year. That's the bar.
Yeah.
And I'm going to sit here and say in everyday society, that's insane, but based on sports, probably makes sense.
Yeah, it's absurd to think about $70 million for 1 year.
Hey, we're getting close to a billion-dollar contract.
And again, I understand the the world we're talking about compared to our real world that you and I live in, right? Like, it's still the real world that they're in, but it's right. It's a different spectrum of the real world. You know, I go back to what you're talking about with the, you know, the parody in the NFL and all this. I think the thing about the MLB is where they're protected is, and I know they don't care about the small market part of it. That's obvious, right? Obvious. But they're protected in the fact that there have been a lot of different World Series champions, and the Yankees have only been to one World Series since 2002, right? I think everybody goes to the Yankees first, right? As the team that can spend all the money and win. They've not been doing that. They've won and made the playoffs, but I think
they make the playoffs most of the time.
Yeah,
and they don't have a 5-year drought.
Yeah, yeah, and I get where you're coming from on that, but yes. The MLB is going to hide behind the fact that there's been quite a few different World Series champions, including a small market team in the Royals here and there.
Right.
And, you know, they're going to use that as, well, you know, you still have your opportunity. Right. And that's why that never changes in my mind.
And then they do a draft lottery, and the Royals should have been number 2.
Yeah.
And they end up being number 6. So they say that that's supposed to create more balance.
Yeah.
So people don't tank. So you fix that, but you don't fix your situation with salaries.
Yeah. And then, you know, Houston would not be considered in the small market, but they tanked, right? And
they did.
And got to where they needed to be and have now been a player for a lot of years.
Best tanking job ever.
Yeah. And so, you know, baseball's a sport, and this is why I don't really get into baseball a lot, because I know what the situation is, right? I watch my team, and it's hard for me to care about the rest of it because they don't care about trying to make a level playing field in our eyes, right?
You feel
of letting the small market come into this and be part of it. And so baseball's kind of just been one of those sports that's like, God, every year after year I watch the same teams, it feels like. But then when you really look at it, it's not. As far as winning World Series and even making the World Series, it's not always the same teams. So, you know, and where it was, you know, at a time there in the NFL with the Patriots, the Chiefs have made the AFC Championship 5 years in a row. Right. Baseball's not having that.
No.
You know, the Dodgers maybe, I guess. The
Dodgers make plays
every
year.
Would be there.
The Braves
kind of
made
in that round. The Astros now.
Right. Astros been, what, 5 or 6 in a row?
Yeah. And ALCS they
right.
made.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So they're similar to the Chiefs in that realm of the same team being there. But it's, again, baseball's baseball for me. If my team's good, I pay attention to it. If they're not, it's hard for me to go through a whole summer caring about baseball.
No, I get it. The deck seems to be stacked against you,
yeah,
is what you're trying to say. And then the Heisman Trophy was awarded over the weekend.
It is my great pleasure to announce that the 2023 Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels from Louisiana State University.
Jaden Daniels, off a 3-loss LSU team, is the Heisman Trophy winner. Finished 300 points ahead of Washington quarterback Michael Penix to win the Heisman. Third in FBS with 3,812-yard passing yards, 40 passing touchdowns, just 4 interceptions. He ran for 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns. He benefited by playing in some high-scoring games because his defense was horrible. Jaden Daniels winning the Heisman is a stat-driven award this year, which is fine. Bo Nix had a great year. Michael Penix had a great year. Marvin Harrison Jr. had a great year. Jordan Travis having a pretty good year until he broke his leg. But was there a year where there was less fanfare about a Heisman? I mean,
yeah,
this was
weird.
Just like, hey, we threw some guys
just
together.
Throughout the whole year. Like,
yeah.
It was just like, well, maybe this guy, you maybe didn't really hear the hype about him very much this year. I didn't anyway.
No, and I think part of that is you didn't have, you know, and the West Coast might be part of it. Knicks and Penix on the West Coast, games being later. And they were part of great teams that ranked in the top 5. That's what's interesting about it. Yeah, I think Michael Penix, if he was I think if Michael Penix was a quarterback of Alabama and they were number 2 right now, he had been a hands down, would have won it.
Not a question.
Because he's in Washington and they're 13-0, he doesn't even win it. And it goes to SEC quarterback, lost 3 games. And by the way, they lost 45-24 early in the year to to Florida State. And he didn't have a great game. And Florida State, I mean, he had numbers. Florida State won by 21. And so we sit here, and let's get this all right. We're awarding a guy that got smoked by a team that went 13-0 that you didn't think was good enough to be in the playoffs with a backup quarterback. Jaden Daniels won the Heisman, so you think he's really, really good. That makes that win for Florida State look even better, right?
Yeah.
On the road. And you're sitting here and you see these backup quarterbacks win games in the National Football League, and you see even some backup quarterbacks that won some games in the collegiate level too, and you're sitting here saying that the Florida State Seminoles couldn't have at least done something worthwhile in the playoff. And by the way, the other thing somebody pointed out is they weren't going to be with their third-string quarterback. They would have been back to their second-string quarterback, and there wasn't much of a litmus test to see how good this guy's going to be because he got hurt against Florida. So, you know, going back to that whole discussion, Florida State should have been in. You may disagree with me, but I think they should have been in. They're 13-0. But this adds just a little more feather to the cap to say, hey, not only did we beat LSU, an SEC team on the road that lost three games, and we gave them one of the losses, we beat the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback in this team, not by 1 point, but by 21. But yes, we're not good enough to be in the playoff. Makes total sense.
Yeah. Writers and media vote for this, and then you have a committee that puts the other thing together, and it's like, what? It is contradictory. And the fact that, you know, Travis finished fifth, you know, in the voting, and it's
wasn't
like,
invited there.
Okay, he wasn't even invited, but he's so good that you can't let this team into the playoff because he's not playing. And so there's a lot of stuff there that obviously contradicts what the playoff committee thinks about the season as a whole. I think that the big issue is that Penix and Knicks kind of canceled each other out because they're both on the West Coast. And I think people were like, oh, SEC guy here had a huge year. And it was. It was stat-driven. It was based on what he did running the football as well as passing the football. And he had an outstanding season. I'm not going to take that away from him. But it is weird. 1 year, it's like it's got to go to the best player on the best team. And then the next year, you're giving it to who you feel was the best player with the best stats. And so there's not a lot of consistency with the Heisman Trophy voting either.
Right.
Well, there's consistency. There's SEC kids that win it a lot.
Yeah. Somebody, this is kind of funny, to end the show here and put a bow on it. We started with the Chiefs. We end with the Chiefs thing. So Ross Tucker puts this out here. And there's a picture of the play where Tony was offsides, except it's pretty funny. Tony is lined up 10 yards offsides. They moved him with the Photoshop. And then he put, still can't believe they called offsides on this. Chiefs got screwed. Looks okay to me. Andy Reid should at least got a warning about this. And Mahomes should receive a public apology for the error. And it shows Tony lined up 10 yards downfield in front of the offense. You know, I kind of get the point. I mean, he was offsides. It was clear. And if you're a Chiefs fan and you don't think Tony was offsides, then it might be time to go see your local optometrist.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.